Hi, Stephen Ternik.
Hi, Otto.
Stephen, we are following a line of ideas for your website, Stephen Ternik, on scienceoflife.nl, where we are exploring some of your research into the relationship between physics and health and social knowledge and mysticism. Basically combining the whole span of how people try to work together in humanity. And you suggested that for today we go into a discussion and exploration of the concept of mass delusion. So I suggested that we do a recording of that, and that I do an interview on that. But basically I would like to ask you to give a brief introduction first of why you would like to address this topic of mass delusion.
Yeah. So the most important thing about mass delusion is that you have to research into deep social psychology. So it won't be enough to just study groups or individuals, because the mass is a lot of more people than maybe a soccer game is maybe the best example. The events around a soccer game, the whole thing, not only the stadium, the people who come in, who pay, the whole thing got a busyness. So we had this, of course, also in Rome, or of course the Greeks also had the theaters and all these things. But this rationalized form of mass events is a very new thing in human history. So it's about, you can say, about 100 years. And so it then I came into the this topic of the propaganda, who at first found out about propaganda. And for example, Edouard Bernays, he was a nephew of Sigmund Freud, and he made, so it's around the World War One, he made research into the masses, how to influence the masses. But at that time it was really called propaganda. Also the book was called propaganda. Afterwards it was, of course, switched to public relations. So Before Bernays, we only have, if you really look into the sources, we have in the Middle Ages a Frenchman, I think you call him Etienne Le Boitier. He was a lawyer. He wrote about la servitude volontaire, the voluntary servitude of the people. He was the first, maybe, to find out something like this. Then we have Le Bon, of course, he's very well known. But the whole literature starts at a certain period, and this is around World War One. So the masses took a momentum around 1900. And with the advent of the assembly line, when the assembly line was introduced, actually the new consumer was born, or the client, the customer, how you call him or her. And then we have slowly a lot of literature. It's evolves a body of knowledge about these things. We have starting Canetti, Elias Canetti. We have also in America, we have Meg Douglas, who never became a behaviorist, so he stayed on his own paradigm, a very important psychologist, but he never joined the mainstream. So slowly we have a body of knowledge, and this is, and I have these 10 books listed there. 10 books, I think, are very, these 10 books are something like a key literature if you want to study this phenomenon. And of course, I would, with special reference to Hermann Broch, because he's not very well known, but I think a very important thinker of the last century. Maybe Canetti said he was a very hectic person. he was always running to another person and said, now I have to go to another person. So he also had some problems, maybe psychological problems. I don't know exactly what, I don't know the personality. You received this article from Endre Kis, this Hungarian professor. He is an expert on Broch.
Yes.
So there you can study him, can study it in detail. Endre Kis is it's a German article in German, but he is mainly writing in German and in Hungarian. Some articles are also in English. So this is and the assembly line. We have the assembly line. We have slowly this propaganda today, public relations, how to influence the masses, how to make them to make a customer, how to produce, how to create a customer. It's all about creating a customer or a client. And this, like the, in the soccer again, you see these shops for the articles. You see the stadium. You have trainers. It's a topic. I know people when I was young, when people still were forced to go into church, that many young people went to the football stadium that they don't have to go to church. So it's become even a substitution. Mm-hmm. Because they had this on Saturday afternoon, these radios, and afterwards, of course, TV. And many people did not, of course, try to avoid the church, and then they went into the soccer things. So it's also, for me, soccer is a very good example. And I don't evaluate this, I don't say it's good or bad, I just see the phenomenon, and it's, of course, it's not an evil thing. It's not, I wouldn't say it's an evil thing. Of course, other mass phenomena are evil, ethically very dangerous tendencies. So, and then what we had? We had this other thing. We had one last, about this. It doesn't come into my mind.
Okay, this is the way you got into this. You were looking into how people, when the world population increased, had to relate to each other differently. And in a way, from the individual to the masses, there was also a transition, which I would like to describe as the transition from individualism to materialism, that masses were not just looked at in a way of a large group of people, but also in terms of a large clump of matter. And in sociology and economics, you can find that rather than theories about free will and relationships, there were more and more theories about inertia and the rigidity of matter as applied to society. And earlier you have described in your previous discussions that you started to look at that difference between individual freedom of choice on the one hand and the lack of freedom of choice in large groups of people. But now you're also addressing how that lack of perspective of the individual and also the lack of respect for the individual has two components. On the one hand, it is because theories of physics were applied to describe society, humanity, and politics. But on the other hand, political models were introduced, which are psychological, sociological models, in which the freedom of choice of other people was bluntly denied. And can you tell a bit more about what you have found about that? And maybe it's easiest to split it in two topics. I don't know which one you like to go into first, into the way the laws of physics have been applied onto society, basically assuming that people do not need to think. And the other topic in politics and sociology, It was simply assumed that people in politics mm-hmm. should not have their own choice, but that others should represent them.
Mm-hmm. Okay, we start with politics. This is what now it came into my mind. We have a very interesting person from Russia, but he's also not very well known. It's called Julius Hecker. Was born in at that time Petrograd, Petersburg, and was also social scientist, sociologist. I think Columbia University PhD, and he went back to Russia. And when at the times of the revolution, and he has written many reports, and he said, based on interviews with Russian soldiers, that the revolution, the Leninist revolution, was not just a planned event; it was a mass event. Also the Russian revolution has to be seen in this framework, and this political thing is very well connected to this to Edward Bernays, who made the statement that democracy can only function if you manipulate people, if you try to influence them. Otherwise, it won't function. So everybody can read this in his books. One book is called Propaganda. The other one is called Crystallizing Public Opinion. And Crystallizing Public Opinion was one of the main manuals of Joseph Goebbels. So it was in his library. This is a book, a very important book in his library. And of course, he also took over this word propaganda. So we have at the same time, in all these industrializing nations or economies, we have the same tendencies, of course, with different responses. But we have the same tendencies. We have paper money. We have the assembly line. We have social upheaval, great migrations of people. So really masses. And of course, maybe this you can say that the people who were in power tried to find techniques how to handle, how to manage all these people, and terrible great movements of people over the Atlantic, the arriving in America. You have also different migrations yet in Europe from to the industrial areas. So and politics maybe tried to handle these things some way, to control it. I wouldn't say to manage it. And Bernays is was in this, if you like or not, it was a genius in this in his métier. Was a genius, and he brought women to smoking, and all these campaigns have been done, and. It's really they showed actually that mass behavior can be guided from behind, and this is, you can read it in Organizing Chaos. It's, his introduction into his book Propaganda is called Organizing Chaos. So you have this. So it has been found out that. Especially afterwards, when there was so many people needed for manual labor, that you have to create this customer, this mass consumer society, and this was maybe sought as a response to these new technologies. New technologies, a new type of mass psychodynamics. New type of mass psychodynamics, new technologies, new type of psychodynamics. Maybe today we have the same thing with the social media and all these things. So we have the same thing.
Yes. I'd like to connect up to that because in the past I've been exploring how science comes to scientific consensus. And looked at the relationship between the individual. Mm-hmm. In relationship, forming groups, forming humanity, And I compared that to photons changing the structure of atoms, thereby creating molecules, yes or no, and thereby creating matter. So I explored a very physical material metaphor to see in to which extent the manufacture of scientific consensus was actually following the laws of matter.
Yeah.
And then, of course, you can find that at the lowest level, the newness of science always comes out of, one of my friends called it, disobedience or hope. Mm-hmm. That, that there is somebody who thinks in a different manner, and as a result, the material structure, the material cohesion of society has changed. And when you talk about Edward Bernays, he specifically followed, which is, of course, the approach of Sigmund Freud as well. He followed the idea that people operate by reflexes, which is the same what the Catholic Church assumed, that people do not really have a soul of their own unless it is developed. And if you look at it in terms nowadays, the soul would be the ability to operate and express freedom of choice. So Bernays operated the notion that people do not have freedom of choice, should not use it, and should be treated like materials, and behaviorism is a part of that whole line of thought. And we see that a lot of the behaviorism is now flooding society. People are treated like inert objects. The whole social media are merely an extension of the philosophy of Edward Bernays.
Yes.
The mass media, the Hollywood movies, all of them are part of this conditioning approach.
Of course.
And you evidently have a view of, yes, this exists, but you also have a vision that this is perhaps not all that exists. So could you tell me a bit more about why you are studying this and what you are looking for beyond that?
I was impressed by this article from Professor Kish about the not that the maybe even the mass may have a soul, as Bloch said it. Even the masses have a soul. So, but this soul, of course, you can dehumanize it or humanize it. So you have two ways to use it. And at least we saw a lot of tactics to dehumanize the soul of the masses, but of course there exists, even in the masses there exists a soul. Even in a great mass of soccer, you look at the soccer games, there's, this is it's also a psychological event. So if this other proposer from Newman here wrote this about the also a little bit anarchistic article that he said it's only a politics of refusal. So like even in the Soviet Union, the people said, okay, we become refuseniki, refusenik. We don't participate. This works to a certain point. Or for some people it works, maybe some percentage of the people, but it does not refer to the whole system. So we have this... we had this example many times that humans work very well in small-scale groups. Also, ethics evolved small-scale. Also, as you said, science or formal systems of thought evolved small-scale. But humanity has not found an answer how to do these things in large scale. This is the main problem. So, to evolve the ethical systems of morality and the formal systems of reasoning to a level of large scale cooperation, but not with a tendency of dehumanizing people. So dehumanizing does mean to, of course, to rob them of their free will, to make machines out of them, Pavlov machines. This is what I think. I studied the economy because I thought, why, when I was a young boy even, I can very well remember, because I saw this many people at that time with bicycles going to factories, these many cars driving to from here to there, the buses were full of people, and I thought, who did this? It was not like a concentration camp. But it was looking like a concentration camp. You have have made photographs from that, or if like a physicist, you have been studying who moves here or there. It was looking like really like a machinery, and I thought, what is the reason for all this? Is only okay? People had to have money. Some people said they had to have money. Some other people said, no, this is how it's being, this is the only way of life, we can't do otherwise. And for most people, even the war, if they have been soldiers, this must have been for them like a vacancy. For those who have survived, it was at least a change in their lives. So many of these, especially factory workers, were positive even about the Second World War, because it was some break in their idiotic life. So I studied these economic theories, and okay, it's, as I told you many times, it's good for private wealth management, but it's not enough. The theories are not enough for public economic management, for bigger projects. And then I looked for, of course, other methods, and I saw statistics is interesting, of course, you have the probability theories, and the last 10 years, I discovered this physical approach, but not in a, in a manner like they also try in the German Physical Society, that it's too physical, but somebody, they had to start somehow. And like Mimkes, Jürgen Mimkes, or Kümmel in Würzburg, Mimkes was in Paderborn, they started something, and they have this special division within the society, physics of socioeconomic systems. And of course, this is not good news for economists, because they like, as you said, there are some schools, and the schools are only a reflection of the political spectrum, or if you like, property of the property property relations in a society. So you have you have property structure or property process is not, but property structure in a society, and this series only reflects who is owning what, you know. And I was not very satisfied with many theories about land-based economics and natural resources economy, and all these are not mature theories, so I cannot apply them large scale. This is for small groups, or some people like to make themselves autark. They can do it, but it will not. It will never lead to a large scale cooperation in a society. So this is there is something lacking, that what I call the quantum leap. This is also what I did with this Russian Academy of Sciences, that to advance the topic. And so it's a combination of I would call it statistics, very advanced statistics, so data science, not so much, but of course you need big data too, statistics, physics, and it's also psychology, but more deep psychology, not psychology on the surface, deep psychology. Of course, as I have three children, and so I get this news every day, what's happening in schools. I don't, I was living for over 10 years in a youth hostel, so I know what young people have in their minds.
Yeah. I would like to ask you to juxtapose a different idea to this, because you've now talked about education and in a way that it is going back to the notion of who owns what, or but also who is what. And yes. Underlying economics, which is the topic which you're already bringing out into the story, underlying that whole notion of economics is, of course, the who is what or who owns what, which was already part of Roman law. But when you look back further, you see that it boils back to what was previously described as religion. So what people know as religion now is for the Judeo-Christlam, the Judeo-Christian Islam polarities, all based on a written text in which that was written down, took over the role of deciding the life of other people. So that is where the Book of the Church also became the Book of Law, but it also became the Book of Finance, and thus became the basis of economics. I would be helped if you could tell me a bit more on your take of religion as that kind of implied instrument for social organization and social cohesion.
Okay.
Because very often people ignore that, and economists will, by principle, deny that they are actually operating a religion, a belief in money.
This religious thing first. So religion, in my opinion, has nothing to do with God, or nothing to do with an eternal upper force. It's religion is anthropology. It's you can study this in any type of religion, that the differences are very great in the groups. And in the groups, differences are greater than between groups. So you have really something like statistical laws also in this religious concepts. So religion has nothing to do with maybe mysticism or with a faith, as I said, in an eternal upper force. That's absolutely different thing. And now, if you look, you can say, okay, the Bible says this, the Bible says that, or Moses received the Ten Commandments, the ten words. Or this is one thing that you can claim an event. You can claim an event that this happened or that happened. Jesus has been resurrected from the dead. So Archbishop of Canterbury, no resurrection, no Christianity. So you have, and then you come to Heinz von Förster. You have the interpretation of the interpretation and interpretation. So of a long chain of interpretations because of the text. You can maybe study it, if you study now maybe into this biblical literature or ethical literature, you can find statements. But sometimes you cannot isolate the statements from the text, you get again a problem. Mm-hmm. Let there be light. But before you have this and you have that, so and this again does not fit together. And this is the reason why we then there is another event happened. I don't know, this Mormon thing. Also, the guy found some golden tablets or something like that. You know, it's again claiming an event. And this is, of course, there is. Yes.
We have a thing back on the recording.
Some echo.
Just going.
Echo. Okay, and we cannot. So if you study a text, give yourself the time. It is possible that really even in the Torah you can find statements that are of universal character, but if you really read the text and if you are honest. You are reading the history of a tribe.
Mm-hmm.
So this has to be. You cannot say something like a tribal, not a society, tribes, and the interaction of tribes is being discussed. And then you have, as we said about the persons of Abraham, so we have archetypes, psychological archetypes. This is what you meant about Cain and Abel too. You about the carnivorous tendencies, it's the carnivorous cultures. And so we have archetypes, like Elie Wiesel explains in many of his books. Many characters of the Bible are only archetypes, psychological archetypes. So this, so you can approach it, and then I would say then you come to this Central European phenomenon, for example, of the science of Judaism, or how it's called, Wissenschaft des Judentums, Wissenschaft der Torah. There you come to some more solid assumptions. You can come to more solid assumptions, but this whole circus about this holy text and this extreme reading of text only produces even more misunderstanding. So you have only one chance: you study the text, you can isolate some statements, and you can say, okay, it's true, it's not true. The other thing, what is the real origin, for example, of the Ten Commandments? Okay, one can say it's Hammurabi or Zen happened. So if this is a belief, your own belief, you believe in an event. So this, of course, has also a lot to do with mass psychology. And even in the Muslim countries, you have these many problems because there are many young people, many people find no work. And you have a mass upheaval of people. In the other, on the other hand, people are confronted with an absolutely modern world, cell phones in Iran are being used by many young people for dating, and they are dating on toilets, on public toilets. So so I have to understand that nobody can know the truth. So some things you can only believe, and this is the reason why it's impossible now to any paradigm to preach to all humanity. So it's something like an open discussion is a possibility, an open dialogue. Where you an open dialogue is possible. Where you Muhammad, you try to understand the life of Muhammad as a trader, as an orphan, then the resistance in Mecca, and so you it's just, it one can understand these things, but this is something like a reconstruction of events, a reconstruction of an event chain. But these other things are, I think, very dangerous because you really have to acknowledge, for example, that this Genesis thing in the Bible, this was put. I think it not only I think so. It starts. The Bible starts with Genesis, of course, also because it wants to appeal to all humankind. And you have Noah and all this also appeals to all humankind. But these things have to be taught more with a better pedagogic intent or intention. And some things are only emotion that people, of course, don't want to die. And they make themselves their minds about what will happen with me afterwards. But it's more important, as Heinrich Heine said, it's before also, we want also to live before we die. And this is what I am struggling with. So how it is important to live a normal life, but of course without attacking or robbing others. And I found it extremely difficult to start projects and to do new things. So it's not as theories tell you. You go into a school or into university, and they're telling you how to do entrepreneurship. And if you will do this, what they are teaching, you will absolutely go in ruin. Because it cannot be taught, it can only be done. Some parameters you can teach, some parameters you can teach, but this, as I said, free choice has to do with opportunity detection, Also, you have to detect, to recognize opportunities. Then you have, of course, also opportunity costs. So it costs you something. If you do something, it costs you something. I don't mean money. It costs you not only time. It costs you energy, life energy, energy of your life. So this is, I'm aiming at a totally different understanding of the psychology in economics, of the physics in economics, and the philosophy of economics. So of economics is to achieve a good life for all people, for all living people, and not only for some classes or strata. This is my aim. Otherwise, you should become a private wealth manager, what many anyway will do. Anyway, yeah. Do you live? I think you're a lot of time in Switzerland. You know, you are in Switzerland is a country par example for these things. You know, for this, it's a pool for people. They can go there. They can park their money into some gaps, then they pull it out. So you have this is a super example. But many people lost also. Even the Wilhelm Reich Trust. Lost money because he was allied with the Union Bank of UBS. Hmm. So it's also this crisis also costed them a lot of money.
Yeah. I would like to connect that back to something that you said before.
Yes.
When you spoke about the way religions operate as abstractions, and at that level you can see that it is that whole notion of thinking in abstractions and treating people as abstractions, which leads to that and religious and educational and political and thus as also as a social approach that there is an abstraction of people, that people are treated as objects.
Yes.
And in much of what you present, you see that there are limitations to that, let's call it an alienated view of reality, where people are outsiders. And of course, in science, that was the archetypical vision, that the scientist was an outsider observer. That paradoxically puts the scientist in the position of the God of the Bible, as from outside looking on and basically not interfering with what's going on. And so at that level, suddenly you have this sort of short circuit between science and religion, that on the one hand, science says, no, we have nothing to do with religion because the Pope said that that is so. But on the other hand, the scientist was playing God. And when we go back to the core topic which you are addressing, that in economics, that does not work out well. And this is also where I would like you to go back a bit to help me understand better why you looked at into the psychology of the masses. You've already said that basically the foundation is in the religions, and then it was followed up in the Roman legions with their amphitheaters. Then in the Second World War, Goebbels applied the views of Bernays and treated people as will as objects which could be conditioned by circumstances and contexts.
Yes.
And of course now we see that the Hollywood industry, the advertising industry, the social media industry, and even the political environment which is operated by advertising industry creates a context in which people get a system of beliefs by which they operate, by which they behave in a way which doesn't come from their own choice. And so on the one hand we see that people are treated like robots that can be programmed, but on the other hand we see that people behave like robots which are programmed by schools, by religions, by the mass media, by political advertising structures. And I know quite well that that's not the kind of reality that you look for, because in your earlier interviews you were very clear that you look at economics as part of a social system where people relate to people.
Yes.
Are you connected that to health of the individual, health of society? Mm-hmm. And in that interview, you also spoke about the foundation in human freedom of choice.
Mm-hmm.
Because at that time, you spoke also about your experience between living in the West and living in the East.
Yes.
The West said that people have individual freedom of choice, but at the same time, money determines the value of all.
Mm-hmm.
And in the East Bloc countries at that time,
protection.
People were not given that freedom of choice, but at the same time, they didn't use money as the measure for everything, but they used the Politburo politics as the vision for everybody.
That's right.
So with what you are doing, coming back to this notion of the madness of the masses, or the masses treated as if they're mad, where can we go from there?
I think that the real problem with our economic system is not that we that, for example, money is being issued out of thin air. This is not the only problem. The main problem is that this attacks our physical existence in the long term. So, okay, you have fracking, now you have a little bit more oil. And I won't say it's bad or good, but there is this conflict between the short-term gain and the long-term pain. And our the whole system is too much on short-term gain, and it causes long-term pain. That's I think the main problem. And it's like you want to get very fast sex, and then you get an infection. It's like this, and then you have long-term pain. And so this balance has something to do with mass psychology. It has to do with that people feel insecure and they want to have a more stable life or more secure life, or maybe even led by values and some maybe good values in terms of not only this life and the afterlife, and to where they want to be in harmony, actually. This is also the reason. There's also an Israeli sociologist, it's a woman. She wrote many books about these feelings of buying, when people buy something, how they feel, and all this. And the main thing is for many people, maybe who possesses what. So the natural resources, the access to natural resources. But our the main problem is the monetary system is used so much currency, if you like, that really we will run out of resources. So, or of course, human ingenuity will find something new. It's also possible. But this, I think, is a short term. It's based all on short term gain, but it produces long term pain. And you had wars, and you have 70 million dead before World War II. You had World War I, maybe about 20 million people dead, and then we start anew. So it's a big, and this is caused by the way how economic thinking is applied. So this has to be changed. This has to be changed. The money should only be a means of exchange. So you have also to consider interest and all these things. But of course, for some things you will need interest. So and we have no not only in religious sphere, we are always come to the frontiers of communication. But also in these spheres, you have a lot of clubs, I would call them, just clubs. They are clubs. And these clubs, they get some financing and some donations and some endowed chairs, is being researched into, but it has nothing to do with the truth or with trust, and it has nothing to do with human health. So it's just producing a lot of short-term gain, maybe in a mass scale, short-term gain, but it will end up in a mass scale long-term pain. And I don't know if Henry George was right, you know, if this if this land tax, this single tax, is the only solution or remedy. I think if the state is so big, as for example here in Germany, the state is extremely big, and if you we could not finance all this thing, even in Berlin they could not finance this thing with a single tax. So there must be a mix of factors. Maybe that that really that necessary resource, something like a clean energy index or something like that, for money. So there are enough movements, enough ideas. This has to be brought together. This is a these are many puzzle. It's a pieces of a puzzle, and this has to be brought together somehow. And but I, for example, the single tax alone won't do it. I always read this newspaper, this George's journal, and yeah, land is more important than money. I agree. Natural resources are more important than money. That's for sure. But you have to consider also what is what about labor, what is capital, what is entrepreneurship. So many answers are not given, and then they stop the dialogue because they have no more answers. And that's, then you have to say, okay, I don't know the answer now. Let me think a week. I will write back or something. It's also a possibility. So, but this these are clubs. There are some clubs, as you said, that science works like social psychology. Like this kinetic point in the Moscovici experiments in social psychology, that everybody says, oh, it moves. Then everybody says, okay, the point really moves. It actually didn't move. And this you have also in science. And if it's only disobedience, I don't know. As you said, disobedience is not for sure. There have to be pioneers. And there have to be pioneers. There have to be people who are more avant-gardistic. And I wouldn't call it altruistic, but who can do it on their own, who can also go some distance alone, and are not always looking for applause. You know, it's that is of course not the way to do it. Or these scientific conferences, many conferences are not very interesting. So you have a lot of conferences that are not interesting. Some of them are interesting. So it's. I think this open open knowledge, open dialogues, the open discussion, the open society, of course, this is the tendency. And there we can maybe develop more freedom of choice. Or the other possibility is there is a genetic structure that maybe from 100 people, 5 people like the freedom of choice. So we have maybe we have in common one genetic structure. I don't know, you know. It's, I assume that all people want to have more freedom of choice. This is my assumption.
Mm. When I hear you speak at this level, we've been talking about some of the other topics, and I am brought to think back of what we discussed at the other time. When you were talking also about the need to shift from a physical or material perspective to that of medical and health.
Yes.
But not a medical perspective as we know it now, where people are profiteering of disease.
Yeah.
But what you were looking for of the investing in health.
Yes.
And then, of course, you're also shifting from people being consumers to people being creators.
Yes.
And so while you're talking here about the madness of the masses, basically you have now brought that into a context that the madness of the masses basically only exists when people are treated like not having a free will and a free choice of their own. If people are treated like material objects, which will behave according to the conditions that are provided, basically the chemical view on physics, that you raise the heat, it will melt, you melt, you lower the temperature, it will freeze, and that society is treated in that manner.
Yes.
And that in football stadia you can see that happen, and political elections you very clearly see that happen.
Yes.
And the other side of that is that people decide how they want to live their life on their own, connect up with others, sort it out between them and amongst each other, Mm-hmm. And then by doing that from a larger perspective, mm-hmm. are also responsible for the level of humanity.
Mm-hmm.
But at that level, then people are individually are the politicians of their own life.
Mm-hmm.
And together they are the politicians which create their community.
Mm-hmm.
And as communities, they then create the balance between the cultures.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Which would suggest that the cure for the madness of humanity is mm-hmm. to realize that humans are not mad,
mm-hmm.
but that there is a consistent denial of their own free choice. The religions already did that.
Yes.
That there is a rejection of their free choice. The mm-hmm. Roman mm-hmm. armies already did that.
Mm-hmm.
There is a,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
A polluting of their free choice.
Yeah.
By what advertising does.
Mm-hmm.
And what seems to be needed is that free choice, the last thing you basically said was that mm-hmm. free choice becomes explicitly debated, mm-hmm. aware, conscious,
yes.
acknowledged.
Yes. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I had the impression that you said that you had a time limit, which was approximately now.
Yeah, approximately, but we can a little bit prolong.
Okay, because then I would like to ask you.
The phone was ringing 2-3 times. So afterwards, I can look what happened, and okay. It's no problem.
So then maybe it's good to sort of come to a conclusion.
Yeah.
Your starting point was okay. Can we know more about the madness of the masses? You explained
mm-hmm.
that this comes in part because of the way people look at masses.
Mm-hmm.
The models that they use are mm-hmm. evidently not useful enough
mm-hmm.
And lead to the conclusion that the masses are mad.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Evidently, the people who make those models, they mm-hmm. would not want to include themselves in that model because it would mean that they are mad.
Mm-hmm.
But then we mm-hmm. do see that there are people who consistently make that distinction between
mm-hmm.
the reality which is valid for themselves,
mm-hmm.
Like Goebbels did.
Mm-hmm.
It makes mm-hmm. it creates a reality which is different for others.
Mm-hmm.
So that there is a separation mm-hmm. between the way they look at themselves and the way they look at others.
I think the identity is the most, this is also on the website, this identity, values, principles, you know, identities, values, principles. So, of course, you can watch behavior, human behavior, but the most important is that more people start to act or to behave, also to act and behave like their own soul mm-hmm. teaches them. So there's you have an outside behavior, so an external behavior, and you have an internal psyche psyche, soul. And so if somebody is maybe, I don't know, nervous or angry, this is an external behavior, as you can see. But you have also to search the reason for why is this person nervous. And more people, what people should learn is that their external behavior becomes more identical in terms of values and principles with their own psyche. So they have to, this is also a matter of mental health, of rational thinking, and both ethical, so you need ethical system of morality for that, you need a formal system of reasoning. And if more people would realize that this is the reason for many illnesses, diseases, and not only the psychological problems and the psychiatric problems, of course also the whole medical things. So we have an interconnection from this, what I would call the mental or the mind, the inner self, and the outer behavior. And this is what I think Hayek wrote very well in The Road to Serfdom. Why do the verse rise on the top? because they actually can produce an outer behavior that has very little to do with their inner self. Because the most successful people are those people who can produce an external behavior without revealing much of their inner self. And so this is this will be the thing. So mental, it's about mental health, it's about economic action, economic behavior, and it's about, of course, medical, if you want, sanity or medical, medical sanity, medical health, well-being. So this, and I think the main reason, the root reason of illness is disease, also in sociopathological terms, not only medical terms, is that people do not act according to their inner self. They produce some outside behavior. We need a different educational system for that. Then people have to learn to act more ecologically, to think about what they are doing. If I go with a big Mercedes to buy sandwiches and drive 5 kilometers and back, this is bullshit. So, and many people are doing this. And so this is also ecological thought. And of course, it burns down to some kind of accounting also. Economy. This cannot be abolished. You know, this is, of course, this is the reason why we have mathematics and all. We need accounting systems. This I don't think that will abolish accounting systems. So it's about the inner self and the outer external behavior. And we have three dimensions for that. We have the education, information, the information flow. Free information flow is important, open knowledge. Then we have need this treaty, what would we call treaty freedom. To we do treaties or we underwrite treaties we want to underwrite. We shall not be forced to underwrite something. It's also important, you know. In the labor market, you won't have this everywhere, and many laws are not very in favor of freedom of treaties. Many laws are against that, and so this is, I think, it's getting loud. It's getting loud.
Yeah, let's see if we can just bounce it out still. We're close to the end of session
here. A long time now.
Yeah.
Okay.
Let me just add something else to what you said. In the documentation that you sent before we started the interview, there was a very, very intriguing point which in me evoked the notion that leaders are very often people who are willing to use others.
But those others are willing to reciprocate that abuse. As a result, the leaders abuse the leaders.
No compo. Could not understand nothing.
Okay, but then I'll just hang up for now. Come back.
Okay.
One moment.
Okay.